course, and I'm interviewing Mr. Richard Spiller, longtime horseman, great conditioner of thoroughbred horses. The great of trainers and conditioners of thoroughbred horses, Mr. Richard Spiller. Now, Mr. Spiller, it's good to meet you and good to be up here this morning and to talk to you about your involvement in the horse industry over a number of years. First, would you tell us who you are?
Well, my name is Richard Spiller. I was born in Mount Sterling, Kentucky. That's Montgomery County. We moved to Fayette County at the age of 4. I was raised on a racehorse farm called the Oak Ridge Farm on the Ironworks Pike, which has been renamed several different times. And the only thing that I ever done was with horses, with the exception of the time that I served in World War II for 4.5 years.
Did you go to school in Lexington?
I graduated from Dunbar High School, Paul Lawrence Dunbar High School.
Dunbar High School. What year did you graduate?
1937.
1937. And during the time you were going to school, were you still working around with horse farms?
I had work to do with the horses and mornings before attending school, and afterwards when I'd get out of school.
So then, horse races just was part of your whole life?
My entire life.
So you grew up on this farm, right?
I grew up on this farm.
And at that time, the farm was called Oak Ridge.
Oak Ridge.
What is it now, the farm? Do you remember what they call it now?
I don't know what the name of it is now.
But it is still around.
It's still around, and there's still horses on it.
Is that right? Now, were any of your family members involved in horse racing?
Well, my father was the manager of this farm. That's how we came to Lexington, Kentucky.
So he came from Mount Sterling, manage this farm?
Yes. Right?
How many brothers and sisters did you have?
There was 6 boys and 3 girls.
And were all of them involved in horses?
All were involved in horses.
Even the girls? Right.
Well, the girls, naturally, they'd be on the farm, they'd have to do something.
So they knew about horses,
sure,
then, right?
Absolutely.
Right. Mm-hmm. And what about your mom?
Well, just a housewife.
Housewife.
Mm-hmm. Too many children to do anything else.
I see. So then you all just grew up on this farm?
All of us.
And then were you bused to Dunbar High School then?
Yeah, yes. See, they disbanded the last 2 grades at Douglas School and moved us to Dunbar, but they'd had a bus bring us to town and drop us off within a block of the school.
So then you came, and then you did the same thing for elementary school too?
Well, no, the elementary school, it was in Maddoxtown, Kentucky.
Oh, in Maddoxtown?
Maddoxtown.
Which is on the outskirts of Lexington.
No, Maddoxtown's approximately 7 miles from the city of Lexington.
I see. And that's where the farm was located.
The farm was located close to Maddoxtown. Mm-hmm. 2 miles around the road, 50, I'd say a half a mile across the field if you wouldn't walk. So I took the field for it.
So every morning you walked to the elementary school?
Yeah. It was much easier.
Yeah. So then when you graduated from high school, did you come working on the racetrack permanently there?
Well, yes, I took a job in running a stable and went to California for the James F. Waters Stable under a trainer named Mule White, Pinchy White. He has a son that's in a high capacity at Hollywood Park.
Okay, so in other words, when you graduated from high school, you went on the track permanently.
That's right.
With Mr. Wyatt, and went to California. How long did you stay with him?
Well, the war broke out. World War II broke out, and they closed down racing on the coast. At that particular time, we had horses at Santa Anita, and we'd run horses in Mexico on Sundays because Santa Anita would be closed on Sundays and Mondays.
Was that over in Aguacaliente over there?
Aguacaliente.
Yeah, Aguacaliente. That's over, what's that the place over across the border?
Tijuana.
Tijuana, right.
Yes.
So then they closed it out.
Yes. Then we came through Arizona, Phoenix, and from there on into Oaklawn Park, Hot Springs, Arkansas. And from there we came to Lexington, Kentucky.
And then after you got back to Lexington, you still with Mr. Wyatt?
Still with him, yeah.
And then you went to the service, is that right?
Well, they were, everyone around me was being drafted. So all the friends of mine were leaving, so I said, well, I might as well go on in, so I volunteered my own in.
Which branch of the service?
Well, I ended up the last year in the combat engineers. I was served over in the Asiatic Pacific for 2 years.
And then after the war?
After the war, I came back. I was out discharged for about 4 days, and I went back to work with racehorses.
And you've been with them ever since.
I've been with them ever since.
So that means that you've been around horses just about all your life then,
about
is that?
About all my life, with the exception
of the time that you were in the service.
In the service.
And so you told me you were 10 years older than I am, so that means you must be 76. If you spent that much time,
that.
If you've been spent that much time around, it's been over 60 years, then, for sure, right?
Easily over 60. But I just turned 76, February the 26th of this year.
I'm sorry, and you're looking really well.
I feel pretty good. I'm up every morning before 5 o'clock.
Every morning. What are you doing presently? Do you run this barn?
Yeah, I'm assistant trainer to Jeff Thornbear, who's the trainer.
All right.
And this is an outfit from Bourbon County called Sunnyside Farm. And it is a very prominent horse surgeon, Dr. Copeland. I know most of them.
Oh, yes, I know him. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Horse's name for him.
He had one by the horse that was named for him yesterday around 3/4 mile 8 and something.
Yeah, Keaton. Copeland's.
Yeah.
Was it a Cope?
It was a gilding.
A gilding. Uh-huh. So he won yesterday.
Yesterday. Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, allow us to tell me a little bit about your experiences around the racetrack. What kinds of jobs have you held? I know you probably started out just walking.
Well, frankly speaking, the most of my jobs around the racetrack was galloping horses until I started being an assistant trainer for several different ones. Then I have trained horses myself. I've trained horses for Billy McIlvaine, which was a mediocre horse, but they win races, mm-hmm. You know. And mostly I have been in the shadows. I was doing the work, but the other people get the credit for it.
In other words, just like it usually is around all the tracks.
That's right. That's
the people who really do the work are not the ones that get the credit.
They never got the credit.
So your first real job where you get paid was you were exercising.
Yes.
You were an exercise for them.
That's right.
Did you learn that from just being around the horses or somebody teach you?
No, I just learned that. I was on the farm with my father, and we had horses to break, and just automatically came natural.
So on the farm, they put you up, you get up?
That's right.
When was the first time, how old were you when you first got up?
Oh, between 8 and 10.
Eight and 10 years old.
Well, you see, this is a young man's game, riding horses.
Yes, sir.
And if you wait until you 18 or 20 years old, you actually just get them. Too old to be trying to do it, but strictly young man's game. If you get broke up when you're real young, it doesn't seem to bother you too much. You heal quickly.
Right.
But nowadays, the boys now, they actually too big to be start trying to learn. Their feet are too big to go on the stirrup, really.
In other words, the younger you start, the better chance you have to be a good exercise boy. And why is it then that you started out, of course you were small enough then to exercise the horses when you were younger, Did you ever think about actually getting a jockey's license?
No, I never was interested in riding as a jockey, because I knew I was going to be too big too fast anyway. But I came around with a boy. He came under me, and I helped to teach him. But he turned out far better than I ever was.
Who was he?
His name was Eugene Carter.
Eugene Carter.
Mm-hmm.
Did he become a jockey?
No, he didn't become a jockey, but he was the best exercise rider I've ever seen.
Is that right?
But he never was interested in that. Yeah. We the High Hope steeplechase that they have here, sometime this month, it originated at the High Hope farm where he and I were working. Well, he rode races there and won, but he never did go around to be qualified.
Is he still living?
Yes, he is.
Still living.
He's, I forget the name of that farm, but he worked for Bruce Hundley in Woodford County.
So, you taught Eugene, and Eugene then became better than a teacher then.
Much better. He was the best I've ever seen.
I'll tell you, that is really something to do. But of course, the students always should be better than a teacher, really. If the teacher teaches it right?
If they listen properly.
That's right. Now, tell me a little bit about the kinds of people that you work with and some of the great people that you work with in terms of who are some of the best exercise boys. I notice now you don't see too many black exercise boys anymore.
No, the main thing about it, it seems like our race of people are getting larger, and most of them are trying to get an education. And I think that's where it's the best thing in the world for them, anyway, if they will do it. But some of them are so discouraged with the things that they have to go through with in the racehorse world. They know what to do, but they won't get credit for it.
Right. And because of that, they see a future in some other area, so they just will stray away from the racetrack.
Definitely.
So the interest is not as high as it was
among
young blacks.
Well, you see, it used to be that this was strictly a black man's world.
The backside of the racetrack.
Yeah, definitely. Once the town comes to see me, buying horses.
So you still give a lot of advice to a lot of folk that are around.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
People respect you as someone who knows this game pretty well.
Definitely.
Now, we were talking about the disappearance of blacks on the backside, and particularly the blacks who exercise horses. I noticed out of the Church Downs Training Center, where we have our horse stable, there are only two black exercise boys around, and almost all of them are either Hispanics or girls.
Well,
and do you find that same situation the same around here?
Right, definitely. I only see three black male exercise riders, but there are plenty of girls. But if it weren't for the girls, we couldn't train horses.
Why do you say that?
Well, the males won't work. That's the whole thing. That's the whole thing in a nutshell.
So the girls
is the best.
Out there trying to keep up with it.
Right? It depends on them.
Isn't that something? Is that in both races, black and white?
That's in both races, black and white. There's no difference in them.
That's right. So you got black girls out here riding?
We don't have any black girls. We used to have one, but she left and went to California. Mm-hmm. Several years ago, I can't even remember her name.
Mm-hmm.
But you never did, the black girls never did take too much to riding horses.
Right. But the white girls are riding horses.
Right now, right. You get on anything.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So now, you working presently now for Thornberry. You've worked for a number of stables over the years, I'm sure.
Well, yes. But not too many, because I wasn't much on changing jobs.
I see.
I got horses for C.B. Whitney Farms.
So you what are you saying is that you usually stayed right around with one or two
Yes,
farms.
Most of it was just, I was on the racetrack for C.B. Whitney Farms. Then I was with
Did you travel with C.B. Whitney?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
and I was with the Elmendorf farm. I used to have be in charge of the breaking and training of the horses there. Then I would take them to Aiken, South Carolina for the winter. And then after we had the trials, then the horses would be distributed to different people. Then I would come back to Lexington and gallop the studs, which I've done quite a bit of.
So you just really, your work has been with larger farms generally, mm-hmm. and with the really good horses too,
yeah,
right?
Very good horses.
Who were some of the good horses that you broke in and you saw race? And
well, there's quite a few. I was an assistant trainer to Doug Davis for 22 years. And we were when I first went to work for him, he wouldn't go to the bigger tracks. And after I saw the horses he had, the potential they had, I actually advised him, I said, these horses will win anywhere. And the first time I got him to leave Kentucky to go to other races, I talked him into going to Arkansas.
Oakland Park.
So he sent me down with the stable horses. Well, he didn't go. So the one particular filly we had, that didn't anybody like her, but I could see something that they couldn't see. So he let me take her with me. And the first time I ran her, she won and she equaled track record. And so he called me up that night and wanted to know how the filly ran. I said, well, she ran pretty good. He said, what's she been? I said, in front. He says, how fast she run? I said, she equal track record. What'd she pay? I said, paid the same price as track record, 34 points. Next morning, he was in the barn. Told me, he said, I got some horses back at Lexus. You need to take them, get ready for spring, and I'll take over here. From then on, he went with the race stable.
So in other words, you induced him to go to other bigger tracks. And then, of course, I remember Doug Davis being one of the leading trainers in the country.
That's right.
But then you would sort of advise him all along the way, right?
Every step of the way.
So and the credit, you got the credit, and you did the advising.
That's right.
Which is typical, isn't it? I mean, that is not untypical among blacks on the racetrack, is it?
You see, this actually, the racetrack at one time was a black man's world. He rode them, he trained them, he done everything with them. The owners, they was just there just to see him run. Right. See, it was a sport then.
It was a sport, right.
But now it got to be such a business.
Right.
Everybody's got them in the backyard and everywhere right. else, you know what I'm saying.
And so therefore, the money came in, we began to disappear.
Yeah, well, right. It's just like the jobs in the cities on the garbage truck.
That's right.
The blacks had it, but they ain't got it no more.
That's right. Like waiting tables.
That's right.
Same thing, we used to have that one.
Bricklayers and everything else.
That's right.
They took everything with
them. So when the money came.
When they saw where the money was, all it would do, they could see how we were doing.
Right.
And they found out what it was all about. Took it away from us.
Now, Doug Davis was one you worked for. You said you worked for Elmendorf Farm.
Yeah, it was Elmendorf Farm, C.V. Whitney Farm.
And some of the great horses, can you name a few of them for me? Some that you just broke. You remember from weanling.
This horse had won the Travelers for Doug. I know I broke one good horse there for him and raised it from the ground up, named Hook It Up, which was mm-hmm. the first horse that had for the unit for the Mounted Police in Lexington. Then, we had so many good ones from there. We had one filly, it was quite a running filly.
Did you ever run anybody in the Derby?
We had a horse part of the Derby. We had won the Arkansas Derby with him, mm-hmm. and he got sick, and we didn't get to run him. And this same particular horse, he died of an enlarged heart, and that's what killed him. But
what about the big races here at Keeneland? Yeah,
we had a horse. See, we had. There was. It used to be. Well, now they've changed the name of the. It used to be the dinner purse here at Keeneland, but they've changed it into a stake race and have it in the fall instead of the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And all the owners, they'd rather win the dinner purse than win the stake race. Because they get to make a speech, you know,
right. And that's the thing. We were talking about your experiences with horses, with Doug Davis in particular, and some of the stakes. You were talking about the dinner purse.
Yeah.
And how people wanted to win that dinner purse because they would then get on the, get the big interview.
Yeah, so they have a big journey on it, and they was a guest of honor.
Right. You know,
see. But the best horse that he had that we got a recognition for was a horse called Annihilator.
Yes.
He won the Travers.
Right. Real fast horse.
Yeah, he was a nice horse.
Yeah.
But that he came along at the wrong time. He came along when the Secretariat.
Right.
He's a 3-year-old at the same time. Secretariat broke down every 3-year-old horse in the country. And he we won the Travers. Secretary didn't run it.
Right.
So I told him we were gonna run the Jockey Club Cup thing at New York. And I begged him not to run. But he thought he could win it and he ran him anyway.
Secretary was in there?
That's right. That was his last race.
But he did become a good sire though, right?
Yes, yes. He's a decent sire. He wasn't what you would call a top sire.
Yeah.
But he got runners.
Yeah, I know a whole lot of horses. I remember the horses by him when I was in Michigan.
Yeah.
Would be mostly sprint. They are sprinters.
Well, he's got a little horse runs here by him that Doug Davis' brother had him up in Michigan. And he sent it down here to Doug's daughter. And it's right here in the barn. Now she's going to run him into the air, too.
Now later, still living? Is he? Still side?
Yeah, now he's
getting up there now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's retired.
Am I interrupting?
Yeah,
you're right.
So your experience spans a long time. You've seen a lot of things. How long have you been on this present
job here
with Jeff Thornberry?
13 years.
13 years. Mm-hmm. And you in the last few years, you just stayed right here. You don't travel.
Well, I haven't traveled since. The last time we took any of the horses to the races was 89. I went to Oaklawn Park. And we haven't, really, what we do is get horses ready for these trainers.
I see.
I've got quite a few going out. Now, we conditioned Tabasco Cat. We had him before.
For Lucas.
But you'll never hear of us having
him. Is that right?
See.
So in other words, you had him right here in this barn.
That's right.
Conditioning, two years, and sent him
to him in California. And we had
so that's what you really do now. Is in other words, this is a conditioning.
That's right.
Where are you working now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is a conditioning place. Yeah. So you get horses ready.
Get them ready for the
and
other
send
man.
Them other guys. Do they sell them to them or they do they own them?
The main thing about it is we train horses for Debbie T. Young, and that's the one that. Lucas trains for.
Right. He won the Horseman of the Year last year.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He's a very low profile man, but he's nothing but a gentleman.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Young, he probably is more recognized than anybody in the state.
He's strictly a businessman.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, last year, of course, won that award as being the top Horseman of the Year because he had some of the best horses, right?
Absolutely.
And that's what happens now. You hear it with Jeff Thornberry, and Thornberry then gets them ready for the other trainers, and they take them out of the
run. That's right.
I don't want to hold you very long, but I just want you to tell me in your own words what you think the future is for blacks in racing. Is there a future for young blacks in racing? I know there's a lot of the entertainers and a lot of the athletes have been pouring money into horse racing, MC Hammer and Barry Gordy, to name a few.
Yeah.
But is there a future in horse racing for black folks?
Well, frankly speaking, I don't think there's too much of a future in the park for the simple reason the money isn't big enough. Now, if they had formed cooperation together and would not have any bickering around and let one man do the training and let them put the money together,
They could do anything they want to do. And that's about like it is in everything, isn't it? We have a difficult time of pooling our resources.
Getting together.
And forming one big corp, which is what they do.
That's what they do.
Syndicate, don't
you? Right, absolutely.
And so they put shareholders and everybody put their little money in.
Yeah.
And that's how they get the money to put in the good horses.
Sure. That's it.
Many of us just fool around with the claimers and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed that. What about the appearance on, I noticed Barry Gordy bought a horse last year. He's running today at the Oak Lodge.
Yeah, well, he's got the resources. And there's no doubt about it. And so is MC Hammer now, you know. But I haven't heard of them much now, you know. I don't know what happened to their stable. At one time, they had, you know, had some of the best horses in the country.
Mr. Spiller, do you think that if it were possible, this is hypothetical, that blacks would band together, pool their resources, wouldn't it be advantageous for them to hook up with somebody like you and other folk who've been around the track, who know the industry, and start from the bottom up rather than coming in at the top level? And so you spend, Magic Johnson, who's a friend of mine, I watched him grow up.
Mm-hmm.
He took $100,000 and just threw it in with Wayne Gretzky, and they bought a horse that I knew wasn't worth anything.
Mm-hmm.
But if they would pull on some of the folk who have the knowledge and the experience, is there a possibility for success?
Well, I know there would be a possibility for success if they would do it. But you see, what the main thing about it is this. If you're going to put a man in charge, put him in charge, don't you start trying to run the business.
Right.
You run the money section of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't get in and try to train the horses.
Right. Yeah, but don't try to train the horses. Let him train the horses. And see, that's the only way they're going to do it. And they could do it if it would. We as a people could do anything we wanted to if we stay together.
That's right. We could actually
put anybody in the White House if we wanted to. We'd stay together.
I believe that. Do you, what is your goal now? Here you are, 76, on the other side towards 80 now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm towards 70 now. Yeah. What do you see yourself doing for the rest of your life?
Well, I'm just going to ride it out easy. I'll be honest with you, I'm pretty secure. And I just thought, the only reason why I do it is to get out of the house, because I know if I sit down, I'm old. I'm through.
So it's part of your life now, so you just go ride it on out.
Well, sure. Well, if I was to go home and sit down, I'd feel useless. And I'd deteriorate so fast, it wouldn't even be funny. I'm better off than a lot of these 18-year-old boys.
Oh, I see that. You're really alert. Do you keep up with the horses just about every day? Who's running? And
definitely.
Who's winning and all that?
And I like to bet, too.
Oh, you like to bet, too, right?
Yes, I do.
Are you going to bet on anything today?
Well, no. I haven't seen anything that I like today, and I kind of took a little beating yesterday, so I thought I'd wait a day or two.
So you still, in other words, what you're going to do is, for the rest of your life, is just kind of just fade on out with it, right?
Just
old soldiers never die.
That's right.
They just fade away.
Well, I'm just going to enjoy the rest that's left.
Well, it's certainly been a pleasure to have the opportunity to come and talk to you, Mr. Spiller. I've heard a lot of talk about you during my days in Louisville. This is a good opportunity.
I used to know about everyone in Louisville that's involved with the racetrack, and it's been wonderful meeting you.
Nice meeting you, too. Thank you very much.